It was Monday morning in November of 2010. Hedge fund manager David Ganek was on his way to work.
It's fair to say this morning was not like any other in my life. On my way to work, right as I was arriving at my office, I happened to see about 20 people from my office standing downstairs where the smokers usually stand, and there aren't 20 smokers in the office. And I got a phone call from the office at about the exact same time saying that the firm had been raided by the FBI.
David Ganek ran a $4 billion hedge fund called Level Global Investors, and it was one of three hedge funds raided that day by the FBI.
The reason they showed up at our doorstep was to, in theory, to preserve evidence. They basically retrieved a bunch of files and more or less got access to our servers. And they actually didn't make an arrest for 16 months until after the raid.
The FBI had a search warrant when they arrived at Ganek's business. TV cameras and journalists were waiting there too to report it all, tipped off by the government. But that search warrant was based on a sworn affidavit signed by an FBI agent that said the agency had a credible tip that David Ganek was complicit in insider trading.
From my perspective, the parts of the affidavit that referred to me, and I was the head of the firm, the parts that referred to me were, in fact, lies.
David Ganek's partner was convicted of insider trading, but that conviction was later overturned. Ganek himself was never even charged. He says he knew nothing about the insider trading that brought those federal agents to his doorstep. All the news and the coverage wound up being too much. Ganek's hedge fund closed its doors, and Ganek turned around and sued the federal government. David Ganek acknowledges that a $4 billion hedge fund manager clashing with the feds might not be the most sympathetic character in America today. But Andrew Cohen from the Marshall Project says Ganek's case is an example of the government obtaining a search warrant on false information and no one being held accountable. It's this week's Case in Point.
The reason I took this case is because there's been so much discussion lately in the wake of the Nunes memo in Washington, the surveillance, the FISA court, the notion of what federal law enforcement officials do and do not put into their affidavits when they're seeking probable cause from a judge to get permission to do surveillance or to get permission to do a search, that it was worth noting that this is something that happens more frequently than the feds are willing to acknowledge. It happens in regular cases. It happens in high-profile cases, and it seems to have happened in this case, where you have an FBI agent swearing an affidavit in which she identifies an informant who makes a direct allegation that David had knowledge of insider trading at his company, which evidently is not true. That affidavit made it into the hands of the judge who issued the warrant that led to the search, that led to the demise of David's business, which happens from time to time. What has struck me since I picked this case is the realization that there appears to have been a wall of silence that's come up since. Was this a misunderstanding between the FBI and U.S. attorneys, or was it something darker?
Andrew, is there more than David's reputation at stake here? Not that that's not important, of course it is, but a judge did rule at one point that the warrant was still good. People in David's firm did get convicted of insider trading. So is it just David's reputation as somebody who knew about this that we should be concerned about?
No, this is not just about one person's right to be free from an unreasonable search. To me, this is about accountability at the federal government. And when you're having this national conversation, right, about federal law enforcement tactics, about what is put into an affidavit, how much context and perspective has to be given to a judge in making a probable cause determination, we need to realize that this does happen more often than we think, and that when it does happen, the feds are very reluctant or simply unwilling to acknowledge the truth of what has happened. And so I went to the Justice Department. The Justice Department isn't saying anything. I reached out to some of the federal officials, the former federal officials who were involved. Silence. The truth is we don't know whether the feds took what happened here seriously enough to undertake their own investigation, and if they did, whether they came to any conclusions.
Right. I mean, isn't the lesson then for police and investigators that you can throw as much at the wall as you want in an affidavit to try to get a warrant? And some of it might be sketchy. Most of it might be true. Whatever. You get your warrant, you do your investigation, and that's what matters.
Yeah. And I think the lesson of this case is that if you do it, and you get called on it because there are errors, or intentional or not, the courts aren't going to come to your rescue if you're one of those people, a citizen, who gets caught up in all of this. That the message from this case, it seems to me, is that the feds have broad latitude to make the kinds of mistakes that were made here and really don't ever have to answer the ultimate question of whether there was some intentional monkey business going on or whether there was a simple mistake.
Well, David, look, I think it's fair to say, rightly or wrongly, a lot of people across America might not have a ton of sympathy for hedge fund guy who bumped up against some federal investigators, right? But you are an American who has rights just like everybody else. Why should people care about what happened to Mr. $4 billion when the feds showed up at his doorstep?
Well, look, I'm none of that is lost on me. The caricature that I represent, I completely understand that it is not one that garners sympathy. But I would say two things. One, my rights are every bit as important as everybody else's. And that's frankly the reason I endeavored to do this. It was, when you said it was to clear my reputation. I mean, it's very hard to unravel what the government did to my reputation, even though I was never charged. You know, a public raid that is leaked and broadly promoted as a PR event by the government and the press that follows that is just not something that you can undo. And you can only dent whatever that tidal wave of bad publicity was. But given the facts that we had here, we felt that there was a ton of leverage attached to these facts. And if the government could, in fact, do what they did to me and to my firm, Mr. $4 billion hedge fund man, and all the negativity that that represents in this day and age, which I completely understand and can empathize with, you know, the hope here was, and hope is unfortunately all it was or all it ended up being, is that by exposing this behavior and the lack of accountability, which is now, frankly and ironically, much more of a national issue due to the Nunez memo and all the things that are happening today, there was, I thought, a tremendous amount of leverage attached to this, and that really the people who stood to benefit from this were the people who can actually defend themselves. And unfortunately, you know, when they say you can't fight City Hall, so much of it becomes about protecting your own and about how this whole system works. And it's just, you know, given all that we had going for us, you know, it's just, you know, incredibly frustrating and sad that, you know, you can only make so much of a difference under these circumstances.
David Ganek, former CEO of Level Global. Thanks for being here, David.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the time.
And Andrew Cohen of the Marshall Project, author of Case in Point. As always, Andrew, thanks.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.